Okay, next and final matter on the calendar today is docket number 51124, Moon versus McDonald Corona Wilson LLP. Mr. Abear, are you ready?
I am, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Carl Abear and I represent plaintiff and appellants in this case. And let me try to build upon the preceding argument because it is very close to what we have here. This case involves the intersection of the Nevada arbitration rules and the Nevada rules of civil procedure. The issue is, when is the case in the arbitration program? Because I counsel and I agree that if the case is in the arbitration program, then the arbitration rules apply. And if the case is not in the arbitration program, then the rules of civil procedure apply. So the discrete issue here is, when is it in the program? This court, well, let me frame the issues the way the parties did. The defendant's respondent said in their at page 6 of their answering brief, quote, because Moon's case was never submitted, ordered, accepted, or remanded into the program, the requirements of NRCP 16.1 always applied. The response of the plaintiff appellants is, a case this court decided back in 1992, I believe, called Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands, 118 Nevada 315, I'm sorry, 2002. This court has already decided this issue, and what it says is, in Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands, in actuality, all matters in which monetary damages are sought, regardless of the amount in controversy, are presumed to be subject to arbitration. If that's true, and it should be, that does not render Nevada Arbitration Rule 5 surplus. Because what that means is, with the exception of class actions, divorces, title to real property, all money cases start in arbitration. And that means Rule NAR 5 has effect. Because NAR 5 says, if you don't believe you belong here, if you believe that your case is worth more than $50,000, then you request exemption. Once the exemption is granted, then, under Rule 4C, the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure apply. Now, so the default position of the rules is that cases start in the arbitration program. If
the rule says they're subject to arbitration, that's the starting point. But then they are either, their point is that then they're submitted or ordered to arbitration, and that those are different words and mean something different, that that's a post-ruling on exemption issue and ties to the assignment of the arbitrator. I think that's the argument they're making.
As far as I can tell, I think that's what they're making too, Your Honor. But I understand this court has to look at the broad picture and how the rules impact litigants throughout the state. And if that position applies, that means the default position of the rule is no case starts in arbitration. And if you want to get into arbitration, you apply for an order from the district court sending you to arbitration, or you stipulate to it.
What do you do with the problem of cases in this dollar amount where they have to file a request for exemption getting lost with no 16-1 if you credit your position, which is they're not subject to 16-1 when they're filed and until there's a determination made on the request for exemption. Then when they're exempted, the 16-1 deadlines have run, so where are they? There's no provision made for that.
The only way I can harmonize that is to say the clock starts on 16.1 when a case comes out of the arbitration program, and then you have your early case conference within 30 days, or within 180 actually. That's the only way it can work.
Why can't it be harmonized to proceed as I suggested, which is that a case that has been filed is subject to 16.1. If it remains in arbitration, it proceeds under NAR 11. And that avoids the risk that there's any case that escapes early case conference review.
There is a scheme for cases in arbitration, and there is a scheme for cases that aren't.
The problem with your citation to Morgan is that was a case that talked about tolling involving 41E. I'm not sure the phrase you read is the holding in the case. Isn't that really dicta, commentary about how the rule, the arbitration rule operates as opposed to a holding in the case?
It is dicta, as far as I can tell, Your Honor, but I assume this court doesn't speak without intending for it to mean something, of course. And there it is. I mean, this case is somewhat a case of first impression, but we have some guidance, and it's in Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands. The cases in the arbitration program, the early case conference requirement is satisfied by the early arbitration conference. There is a scheme in place within the arbitration program.
Right.
Coming out, there's a different scheme.
But my concern is that in cases which are in this never-never land, there's no assurance. If we read the rule the way you're suggesting, there's a vast group of cases that will come out of the program that will be subject to any early arbitration discovery or case conference.
I'm not sure I understand what this universe of cases is, Your Honor. I mean, the way
Let me just offer the hypothetical I offered to Ms. Everhardy, and I'm not sure she and I were communicating. So I'll just pose it to you. The plaintiff files an action. It's a civil action for damages. And the question has to do, it's not one of the automatic exemptions out, so someone has to seek exemption out. In that particular case, if the plaintiff sits on it and does nothing, then presumably it's going to stay in the arbitration program, and it'll be governed by the early arbitration rules and discovery rules that the arbitrator would supervise. But what if the request is made at some later point in time, or the request is made timely and there's a significant delay in acting on the request, as appears to have been the case in the case that Mr. Gale argued, and the case comes out after the 180 days has expired? We would be in never-never land with those cases, unless you assume that the rules of civil procedure require an early case conference, period. Now, that was the hypothetical I tried to communicate to counsel in the previous case.
And I tried to follow it, Your Honor, and I think I understand it.
And it's just as unclear?
No. I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What's creating some confusion for me is what you're saying seems to me that we're going to have both the arbitration rules and the rules of civil procedure applying simultaneously.
And why isn't that reasonable? When the case is going to remain in arbitration, when the arbitrator is selected, and the arbitrator meets with the parties on discovery, everybody knows that that process takes over. Why isn't it a reasonable interpretation? Because Morgan said tolling doesn't apply, so the tolling argument cannot be a basis for avoiding this.
Your Honor, the phrase obiter dicta comes to mind, but Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands has to have some meaning. And what it says is they cases start in the arbitration program. Now, what would create confusion for us practitioners out in the world is to have two sets of rules applying and running at the same time. Because if the rules of civil procedure apply from the beginning, then why have an early arbitration conference under Rule 11? Do we have one of those too? Because what I see happening is defense counsel waiting in ambush saying, well, it's true you had an early case conference under 16.1, but you forgot the early arbitration conference under Rule 11, which also applied. Your case should be dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me there are safeguards in place for people that delay in the arbitration process, and they include sanctions by the commissioner, and they include rejecting trials, requests for trial de novo for acting in bad faith in the arbitration process. But what we need out in the world is some certainty. And the way these rules are being applied is anything but certain. In my instance, I thought, like a lot of practitioners think, and that is the rules of civil procedure apply once it comes out of the arbitration program.
Mr. Avery, so you're reading a Morgan is simply that you have to conclude the case within 5 years. The arbitration doesn't stay the 41E period, as Morgan says. So you have that 5 years to get the thing finished, but still it doesn't kick in for the discovery time period until after the arbitrations are terminated.
Your Honor, I was, to be truthful, I was not focused at all on the operation of 41E, the five-year rule. Why I raised Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands is for the sole proposition that cases with exceptions that are set forth in NAR 3, domestic relations, declaratory relief, real property, with that, except for those things, cases that ask for money start in the arbitration program. All I cited that case for. And that gives meaning to NAR 5, because NAR 5 says, if you don't think you belong here because your case is worth more than 50, ask to get out. Well, why ask to get out if you're not already in? Because what the defendants, appellants want to do here is say nobody starts an arbitration, and then somehow you have to go to the district court and get sent to arbitration or stipulate to it. Well, then what's the point of NAR 5 then? Why request an exemption?
Mr. Haber, I can't remember if I asked you if you wanted to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
I do.
How many?
What's left?
You got 451.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Any other questions?
All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Margo Piskovich. I represent McDonald Corona Wilson, William McGrath, and Joe Lasag. To go back to your question, you have two simultaneous things happening. You file a complaint. It's either in one program or the other. The rules are very clear. Within 20 days, the plaintiff, not the defendant, requires an exemption, files for it or doesn't. In 30 days, you hold a case conference. You do it or you don't. So you have two simultaneous programs that the plaintiff selects, and the plaintiff is the person that knows the value of his or her case. Also, the arbitration rules say specifically, Rule 4C, before a case is submitted or ordered, the Nevada rules of civil procedure apply. They're talking about removing a case. You can automatically go in and then in the arbitration process find out that this herniated disc is operable instead of inoperable. That's when you get out, because you have a case with a value in excess of $50,000. In our particular case, we're not even worried about the 180-day rule. We have a situation where McDonald Corona and Mr. McGrath were served in November 29, 2006, and I accepted service on behalf of Mr. Lasag. I got a one-day extension till January 10th to file the answer. Once the first steps, and I filed them combined, that's the time the plaintiff has 20 days under Rule 5 to take it out, or 30 days under Rule 16.1 to schedule a case conference. Nothing happened in this case until February 2107, when Commissioner Ayer sent a request for information to see if it should be in the arbitration program, and Mr. Haber filed and said no. Okay? Then, basically, we get a pretrial order on April 5th, 2007 from the judge saying set the mandatory status conference. No response. Then I'm assuming that we did have calendared a 16-1 conference on April 18th, because on April 6, 2007, I sent my 16-1 point disclosure and a request for stuff. No response. We have an issue of whether or not it took place on April 18, 2007. I don't care if it did or didn't. It took place, regardless of how you count it, within 180 days. That's not our issue in our case. Our issue is the 240 days. Then there's no response. Assuming we did have it on April 18, 2007, Rule 16.18C says you have 30 days to file the report. No report. I even sent an email on April 22nd saying, send me the report. It's ignored. Then on May 21, we get a notice to set the case for trial. It didn't happen. So nothing happens now until October 31, 2007, when there is a mandatory order, an order comes out from the judge saying set the case and have your mandatory conference. So we show up on November 6, 2007. We have the conference, and that very same day, I file the motion, and I give everybody advance notice that that's what I'm going to do. I don't care about the 180-day rule. I care about the 240-day rule, which is the same under the 05 versions of Rule 16.1 as it is in the 06 version of Rule 16.1. And on the 05 version, on 180 days, you can extend if there are compelling circumstances. The 240 days doesn't have a way to extend that rule. It just says that you have to do it. And so we don't have the same compelling and extraordinary circumstances in 16.181 as we do in point two. It's not there.
Ms. Piskovich, you feel Arnold versus Kipp is directly on point?
I do, and I do not believe that the court abused its discretion. And the interesting part is, if you look at the two cases, I realize that the Kipp case is a medical malpractice case and is exempted by law. However, this case was never submitted or ordered. In Kipp, they had the conference. In our case, we're not sure we had it. I don't care if we had it or not. The 180-day rule isn't the issue here. In Kipp, they didn't file a report. In our case, they didn't file a report. In Kipp, they failed to facilitate discovery. In my case, they failed to facilitate discovery. I got no responses to my 16.1 requests that were served on April 6th. Then they said, and in Kipp, they never asked for an extension. I asked for a two-day extension and got it in 1 day. So the extension rule isn't going to apply. And then they talk about case management being impeded. Case management was obviously impeded. The discovery commissioner had to send an order to say, what are you doing? Then the court had to send a second order saying, when are you going to have this mandatory pretrial conference and when are you going to set this case for trial? This is a case where I don't care which one it is. Nobody asked for it to be exempted. That's the plaintiff's responsibility. And you have to understand, as a defendant, it's not my job to prosecute a case. I let it sit for 5 years, and I'm happy to do so. It is the plaintiff that has the burden to go forward. If we meet and confer, I also have an obligation to file a separate case conference report if we can't agree on one. I never even got a draft of a case conference report. So we're sitting here, and from my calculations, and I actually did a little calculations on the weekend, the rule says you have to do it within 240 days of the service of the summons and complaint. Well, on Mr. McGrath and the firm, that's 342 days that before the case conference report was actually filed, until we actually get to November 6th, excuse me. It wasn't until I filed the motion that a case conference report got filed. And for Mr. Lasag, it's 321 days. Now, that's way over 240 days from the service of the summons and complaint. And then the rule starts with the first defendant, and I didn't have any problem because I asked Mr. Hebert if we could just do one, and I would get it in on a specific date, and I needed another day extension, and he gave me 2 days, and I got it in. Nothing happened after the answer was filed on January 10th, 2007. There was no request for exemption from the arbitration program, and there was no case conference held. And the other thing that's very interesting is it appears to me that the court has jurisdiction to interpret these rules, and there is no abuse of discretion. Rule 4 says, cases filed in the this is the arbitration rule. Cases filed in the district court shall remain under the jurisdiction of the court for all phases of the proceedings, including arbitration. B says, the district court having jurisdiction over a case has the authority to act or interpret these rules. That's abuse of discretion standard. Then it says C, before a case is submitted or ordered to the program, all applicable rules of the district court and the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure apply. After a case is submitted or ordered to the program, and before a request for trial de novo, or until it's removed, meaning you have to be in to get it out because there's a change of circumstances, these rules apply. So we were never in it. The only rules that apply here are Rule 16.1. And the interesting part is, I was noticing both the 05 and the 06 rule, they never changed. The language in those rules never changed on the 180-day rule or the 240-day rule. So if you fail to participate, there is a problem.
As far as appearance or service?
No, they're service. It says, on the 06 rule, it says, within 30 days after each case conference, the parties must file a joint report. And then it goes on, if you fail to, and that's Rule E1. It says if a mandatory discovery meeting is described in Rule 16.1A is not held within 180 days after the service of the summons and the complaint upon a defendant, the case may be dismissed without prejudice. Rule 2 says if the plaintiff does not file a case conference report within 240 days after the service of the summons and the complaint, the case may be dismissed by the court's own initiative or without prejudice. It's only subsection 1 that says unless there are compelling and extraordinary circumstances for its continuance beyond the 180-day period. We don't have any compelling circumstances here. We have inactivity from day one until the court, first of all, the discovery commissioner entered an order, and then the court entered an order. And at that point, it was too late. And I said, hey, it's too late. So that's exactly where we are. You have two simultaneous programs that are only going to be simultaneous for 20 days if people follow the rules. And when Mr. Hebert responded to the discovery commissioner, he said, oh, yeah, we have a big case. We have a big case, more than $50,000.
Ms. Piskovich, did the complaint request the exemption from arbitration in the caption?
You know what? I'm going to have to look in the appendix. I don't believe so. No, it just says it's for professional negligence, which does give a hint that it's more than $50,000.
It doesn't say arbitration. I don't know, in the Second Judicial District, do you have on the face of the complaint whether you're requesting...
You can put it on there. You can. This complaint doesn't have it, and it was filed November 3rd, 2006. So I'm assuming the 2006 rules apply, not the 2005 rules, but under either set, same outcome. Thank you for your time.
You've still got 5 minutes left if you
want
to
use it. Oh, I thought
it.
That was the...
No, that's your five-minute warning.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was it. All right, thank you. Going back to my argument then, when we've talked about KIPP, I do not believe there's an abuse of discretion. And I do believe in this particular case that the case was never in either program until somebody makes a decision, and that they do run simultaneously for 20 days, then a decision should be made by the plaintiff as he or she knows the value of this case. Like I said, under both rules, the 240 days starts to run upon the service of the summons and complaint. And so, and I did extend that out, but we still have more than 300 days. And so in this particular situation, I do not believe that the district court abuses discretion. This is an abuse of discretion standard. And the court has jurisdiction under Rule 4 to determine if the case is submitted or ordered, and the judge specifically found it was not, and he specifically, I think, correctly interpreted the rules in his order, and I do have it here unless I left it in my briefcase, but his order was quite clear on this, where he said, plaintiff served defendants on December 29, 2006. The case was never submitted or ordered to arbitration program, but it was not exempted until March 29, 2007. No case conference report has yet been filed. And he said, the plaintiffs argue the existence of an arbitration program essentially provides an automatic suspension of the rules or civil procedure, whether or not a case is assigned. He said he doesn't agree with these findings. I don't either, or you would have inaction putting us at risk, like, when do the rules run? I mean, by being inactive, they get a benefit. By not following the rules, they get a benefit. I don't think that is the intention of these rules at all. I think you need to make a decision, and you have plenty of time. You have 180 days for one, and you have 240 for the other. You have plenty of time to make your decision. And most of this is a practical matter. If there are multiple defendants, we hold a 16-1 conference when everybody's answered. And nobody has a heart attack over it because you have 180 days. And then we get the case conference report and everybody meets that deadline. This is a case of inaction. And in order to reverse this case, you would be rewarding a lawyer and a client for abusing the rules and not following the rules. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me clear up some misconceptions. I heard that the plaintiffs didn't file a joint case conference report. We filed an individual case conference report on November 21, 2007, after Ms. Piskovich refused to sign a joint case conference report. I heard that we did not act to exempt the case from the arbitration program when the arbitration commissioner asked for additional facts. We responded. We were exempted from arbitration on March 29, 2007, which was 3 or 4 weeks after.
Mr. Hebert, but you didn't file a petition to exempt from arbitration.
I did not, and I should have. Okay. But the discovery commissioner got there before me. And
so you're saying it doesn't matter because the commissioner came in and did
right. The commissioner came in and said, do you have some? He apparently looked at the complaint and said, do you have show me the facts. It looks like you're outside the program, but, and I did. And he said, you're out now. And I want to clear up something else, too. There's no requirement that we endorse the face of the complaint with an exemption. NAR 3 says, if you think you're exempt under one of those exempt categories, which we weren't, put it on the face of the complaint. But nobody, the rule does not require you put on the face of the complaint, I think this case is worth more than $50,000. You request an exemption under Rule 5. And finally, the district court, as did Ms. Piskovich, said you didn't file an individual case conference report, and there's a file-stamped individual case conference report in the joint appendix. And to a certain extent, Ms. Piskovich was arguing outside of the record. The record doesn't say anything at all about, and they failed to respond to a 16.1 request, and they failed to do this, and they failed to do that. And the issue we're here to address is, if a case is in the, when is a case in the arbitration program? If it's in the arbitration program, do the rules of civil procedure apply? And it looks to me like under Morgan versus Las Vegas Sands, that if it's a money case, it starts in the arbitration program, and Rule 4 says the arbitration rules apply until it gets out. Then 16.1 applies. And 16.1 gives 180 days for an early case conference and 240 days for a joint case conference report. And yes, we should have done it sooner. But we complied. And so that's the point. As practitioners, we need clarity on when these rules apply, because the point of the arbitration program is to take the small cases and get them resolved early. If you listen to that interpretation of the rules, nothing starts in the arbitration program, and you only go there if you ask to go there in the district court or you agree to it. That would make the arbitration program virtually meaningless as a way to get the small cases taken care of early. That's it, Your Honor. Any questions?
Any questions? All right, counsel, thank you for the briefs. Thank you for the arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning.
All rise.